Good evening.
Welcome to Sex and the Struggle. This is Ulysses Butch Slaughter. It is, what day is it? It must be like crazy day because I'm having a crazy kind of day. It is Tuesday, November the 14th, 2017. This is Sex and the Struggle, and we are getting ready for God is Sex. And I have been fortunate to come across some really interesting people as I prepare this upcoming event, which happens November the 19th. November 19th, 2017, Chester's MJ Free Theater, 2 p.m. I was talking with a good friend of mine, Frenchie Davis, today, and she introduced me to someone who is now part of my Sex in the Struggle family, and that someone would be Lucette. Are you there?
I am here.
All right. Hey, Lucette, I just decided I'm getting rid of Blog Talk Radio, and so if they're listening to me, I want them to know I'm getting rid of them after this show. So we're going to have the best show I've ever had, and then I'm dumping this platform. But for now, we're going to talk about God is Sex. Thank you for joining me, Lucette.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being with me on my last podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here. Kelly will be joining us in a minute. Kelly Vanderbilt will be joining us in a moment. She just sent me a text saying she's trying to put those babies down. I certainly understand that. What am I going to ask you? Spirituality and sexuality. This is your thing. This is why Frenchie connected me and you. Spirituality and sexuality. How you get into something like this? How is it? How do we find ourselves having this conversation?
So you just, like, have to know what you kind of always wanted to be. So I always wanted to be the Black Dr. Ruth, even right before I went to college. And even though I majored in math education when I first went to college, I knew in my heart I wanted to be the Black Dr. Ruth because I always enjoyed talking about sex. But as with most of us, I did the right thing and ended up majoring in something that supposedly led me into a career that should have been fulfilling. Blah, blah, blah. And then
blah, blah,
I came
blah.
Into
That's
the
right.
ministry. And then I came into the ministry and I never stopped talking about sex. And then I started volunteering as a sexuality educator with a nonprofit in the D.C. area. I lived in D.C. for almost 20 years before moving to Richmond, Virginia. And so mm-hmm. did volunteers and taught sex education with middle and high school girls, was still a youth minister talking to all the youth and answering all their questions. And it finally dawned on me that I could do both sexuality and faith. I could talk about them both. They were not devoid of one another. And so I did some work in the church around HIV/AIDS ministry, and that was my start in really bringing the two areas together, and then had an opportunity to work for an organization called the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, that grounded their work in faith and spirituality and did a teen pregnancy prevention program with them for about 2 or 3 years. So that's how I got started in this work. It was all about my call, and it wasn't until I was 40 that I was like, oh, wait, I can make this a business. Oh, wait, I can do this. For real, because I never had the space, and so I created Will You Be Whole to be the space I always wanted, and that I was creating for young people, but I never had for myself, and nor for many women and other folks, men in the church, didn't have the space to actively, freely talk about sex and faith, right? You either talked about it with your girlfriends while you're doing whatever, or you talked about how you're not supposed to have it, how you feel guilty about it in the church. It was never the positive of both. And so that's kind of how I got into this work. And it would not, trust me, I tried to let it go, but it didn't. It wouldn't let me go. So here I am.
Wouldn't let you go. Wouldn't let you go, huh? Yeah, likely story.
Wouldn't let you go.
All right. How many of us say stuff like that? It wasn't my fault. It was the devil made me do it, right?
Listen.
That's funny.
This time it was Jesus made me do it.
I hear
Jesus,
you. You know what?
Like,
don't nobody want to blame Jesus,
it.
Though. Don't nobody want to blame Jesus. Jesus always getting the pass. He tickles me.
He does, but he's getting blamed for this one.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what? He's big enough to be accepted, I'm sure. From what I've heard about him, he can accept that. I'm looking at your website. Will you be whole? Is that a question? Will you be whole?
Yes. So it is, I think, a question, and I think it is an indictment, and I think it is an imperative, right? And it actually comes from that man Jesus, John chapter 5. It is a biblical reference in which Jesus meets a paralytic man who sits at the pool of Bethesda, and he wants to be well, and he does what he has been doing for 30 years or so in his life. And he is begging the folks to come, or he's waiting for somebody to put him in the waters when the waters are troubled, for him to be well and to get healed. And Jesus said to him, "Will you be whole? Will you be made well?" And it was a question. It was an indictment, I think, an imperative to say, you sitting around waiting for somebody else to do this for you, but what are you going to do for yourself? And what are you going to do to pursue your physical wholeness, your emotional wholeness, your spiritual wholeness, to bring the parts of you that you feel are separated, or the part of you that you have placed responsibility on someone else to have, instead of owning it yourself, right, and taking that responsibility and doing the work to become whole, to bring these parts together. So that's what it comes from.
You know, you covered a lot of ground there, sister, and I'm going to see what I can do to remember everything you said, and maybe a little bit at a time ask you to elaborate on some of these things, because, again, I reached out to Frenchie a little earlier today. You know, Frenchie and I did something in D.C. back in June of this year called Don't Wait Fornicate. Yeah, that was Frenchie's thing. Don't wait fornicate. You know, it reminded me of something Jesse Jackson might say. You know, the whole rhyme thing, don't wait fornicate. And I love the line, and I love the meaning behind it. I think sometimes people think that when we're talking religion, when we're talking sexuality and spirituality, that we're just trying to get a rise out of people, no pun intended, but we're trying to get a rise out of people. We're just trying to get attention. And for me, nothing can be further from the truth. I think what we're trying to do is to shine the light on something that is more than fundamental. Spirituality and sexuality are the same thing. You and I talked about Rev Bev earlier today. And we know that there's a group of us out here that are talking about spirituality and sexuality, or there's this one couple I saw on Sunday that says that sexuality is their spirituality. So, you know, I don't know if I'm coming into the conversation more deeply or if the conversation is getting traction. I just love the fact that we are at a place, and I am part of a conversation where people are boldly proclaiming that sexuality and spirituality are one in the same. So when I told Frenchie, I asked Frenchie if she had some time, and she said, no, but I want you to reach out to Lucette because this is her thing. You want to talk with Lucette about this thing. And when I looked at your website and I saw Talking Sex, by the way, the website, for those that are listening, it is willyoubewhole.com. willyoubewhole.com. That is where you can check out the work of Rev. L, as they call her. Rev. Lucette, we'll talk some more about that too. Rev. L. Lucette Cross. And Faith for Wholeness. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about, first of all, help me understand something. Let's just really break it down for me. What is sex? When you think of sex for all the time that you've been talking about it, what is sex?
Yes. So if you go to my website, willyoubewhole.com, on my About page, I offer terminology, right, so people understand, they can track with me when I use the word sex or sexuality. So when I'm referring to that term, I'm referring to three particular aspects, right? The activity or behavior that we're doing, the identity, who we see ourselves as, and then the expression, how we relate that to one another. So it is, sex is not, it's not a simple thing, you know, it's just not as complicated. And so I understood early on in this work or in my commitment to be one of those voices that I had to coin those three areas very succinctly, because I kept getting asked that question a lot. What do I mean by sex, right? As if all of us don't know what that means, but what happens is that language connects us, right? And so I may say sex, but in your head, you have these ideas of what it is, and somebody else has those other ideas. So when I'm talking about it, I am talking about this confluence, this coming together of our activity or behavior, so what it is that we're doing with our bodies, right? I'm talking about our identity. Who do you see yourself as, whether you identify as straight or bi or polyamorous or asexual, whatever that identity is, right? Even when we relate to our gender identity, you know, are you trans? Are you genderqueer? Are you queer? What are you, cisgender? Whatever that is, that's about our identity, about who we see ourselves as, and then our expression. So expression is important because I, as a cisgender, which means I was assigned female at birth and I present in the world as a woman, that I am, I'm feminine in my expression, which just means I'm a little girly. I like jewelry and I wear makeup and I like a dress and I like to show my breasts and I like a good cleavage, right? And I like to show off my curves, that type of thing, right? And that expression solicits a relationship, right? It relates to other folks in the world on various levels and ways. From platonic to sexual and sensual. And so I'm very clear that that's part of how we understand the sex part.
And I'm going to encourage anybody who's listening to check out the website, because as you're talking, I'm reading down the About section where it says, when I use the word sexuality, I'm referring to three things. And as you point out, sexual activity, sexual identity, and sexual expression. You can't talk sex, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can't talk sex without talking about the body. The body is so important to sex, right? And I think this is where when you and I were talking earlier, and I was talking about, you know, this comment about you can't reduce God to mere flesh. And, you know, you and I had a laugh about that. We start talking about, for Christians anyway, you know, I think if you want to call it a reduction, God was reduced to this character that we call Christ in the flesh. So I don't know what the hell people are talking about when they say you can't reduce God to mere flesh. It's like saying, you know, I don't know that God even has mere creations, to be quite frankly, Rev. L. I don't know that God created some, you know, some incidental shit, if you don't mind my French. It's just insulting to think that somebody would say mere flesh. there's no mirror anything. And I think that this where we get messed up is that we keep disrespecting obstacles that happen in front of us every single day.
And just to add the cherry on top of all of that knowledge you just dropped, and God would not create this mere flesh and then merely call it good.
Right.
So
right.
God created and God said that it was good. So the very
right.
fact that God created us in God's image and said it was good lets us
right.
further know that it is not just merely this thing that is
yeah.
haphazard.
That we have adopted.
Go ahead.
Please finish that thought.
That we have adopted this body negative pseudo spirituality that tries to minimize the body and the flesh for this a super spirituality that is unattainable, or at least it's unreasonable to try to maintain.
Yeah. I like something that you said about being a girly girl. You talked about the makeup. You talked about your not minding showing cleavage, in that the way that in doing so, you're communicating a particular thing. And so as the sender of that message, the expectation is that there'll be a receiver of that message, right? And they will get, you know, they'll pick up what you're putting down, right? So everybody won't get that message. And from my standpoint, that's okay that everybody doesn't get that message, because that's what makes your personal connections very unique and beautiful, is that everybody won't get it. And so as it relates to the expressions that you talk about here, the expressions of the makeup and the breast and whatever else it is that you and anybody else wants to express, put out there in the world, would you say that there is a receiver for every expression that one of us puts out there? Is there a recipient? Because if we're talking about sex, you know, sex, most people say it has two parts, you know, the inner part, right, the female part and the male part, the two parts, right? And if it's not necessarily physical two parts, it is still a giving and a receiving. It's a reciprocity, right? So is there receiver for every message, whether you are bi, trans, whatever? Because I think part of the God is sex thing that messes people up is that I've watched people dismiss the sexual expressions of some human beings, saying that they are ungodly. And it just strikes me that there's something faulty about that. It just seems to me like there's a receiver for every expression, or else there would be no expression of that thing. I hope you're getting what I'm saying here. And she takes a deep breath.
Because there's like 20 things that just came to my mind. But I'm a womanist. I have to stay connected to my grounding. I am a womanist in my orientation and in my understanding of the world. And so, as a womanist, and just a brief primer, it is akin to a black feminist, as lavender is to purple. Right. And so there is a scene in Alice Walker's book and Steven Spielberg's movie, The Color Purple, where Shug and Seeley are walking. And while we don't fully get the context in the movie, but in the book, the context is that they are talking about who God is. And Shug is helping to reorient Seeley's spirituality. Right. This sense of God, as Seeley is continuing this lifelong process of of taking off the nastiness of Christian supremacy. That's a whole nother topic. But what Suge says is, I think God gets mad when you walk past a field of purple and you don't notice it. And so when we talk about what are the messages that we're conveying, and what, and if there is, and us as a sender and persons as a receiver, that when we operate in the world, we're all doing that on various levels.
Right.
Whether it is sexual, sensual, or whether it's, you know, platonic business, whatever it is, whether it's just the human being of like, I just need to see that you are somebody walking past me in the street and you're smiling at me because you see something about me that lets you know I might need a smile or whatever, right? So, yeah, I do think that there are messages that we are emitting, right? And sometimes we're real intentional about those messages.
Yes.
And then there are people that are receiving our messages. You know, even sometimes the people we may be intentionally trying to send messages to, they might miss it. But
that's right.
We are, I think, both consciously and subconsciously sending messages as well as receiving them, right? And that, and just to kind of, you know, as a queer identifying or bisexual identifying person, kind of queering this binary, right? That there's just this idea of a giver and a receiver, and the ways in which some folks just simply connect. And I think that that is a spirit thing. That is a that can be a like a what's the word? It can be just that like the pheromones just happen to connect, right? That my sexual ethic tells me if I go out and I know the message that I'm sending by what I put on, I may connect with an individual and we may make eye contact and they might, in your words, receive my message. And we might in that moment make mutual consent to have sex and exchange pleasure in affirming and healthy and safe ways, and then get up the next morning or that night and say it was good to share with you. Have an amazing day or have a good life or whatever, because there was a message sent out, a message received, some other messages exchanged. And to me, within the sexual ethic that is grounded in one's own spiritual belief system, that is okay, right? Because we have to be, I think, open to the ways in which sexuality and spirituality complement themselves in that giving and receiving messenger receiver type of way. And I do think that that's both very sensual and sexual and very much so spiritual and connective between us.
I'm so glad that this stuff gets recorded, because if I had to run and tell somebody what you just got through saying, I'd mess it all up. And everything you just got through saying was gorgeous. There's a from the time that the lovers get up and say, have a good life, may never see you again, but that was good. And when I say that was good, I don't mean that was good as in yummy. I mean that was good as in righteous, you know.
Yes.
People really struggle with the idea that there can be righteousness in a moment. In something that was not planned over the course of months or the planned over the course of years. And this is when Frenchie and I did the Don't Wait Fornicate with Rev Bev. This was part of the discussion that we are so concerned about lightning bolts striking us down for our behavior, that we don't see that there is righteousness in spontaneity sometimes, because there's a realness that occurs there. And there's just so much to talk about. By the way, I should tell people, just we're having too much fun here. I need to tell people if they want to call in that they can call in, that they can call 657-383-0185. My name is Ulysses Butch Slaughter. This is Sex and the Struggle. We are talking about God is Sex, and I am talking with, I just meet new friends all the time. This is one of my newest friends brought into my life by one Frenchie Davis. Frenchie, thank you, sister. Love you much. This is Reverend L. That is Reverend Lisette Cross. You can learn about Reverend Lisette Cross at willyoubewhole.com. Again, that's willyoubewhole.com. That's where she's talking about sex and faith for wholeness. This Sunday, the 19th of November, Sex in the Struggle Squad is doing Sex in the Struggle, God is Sex, not God and Sex. I have to tell people, I didn't say and, A-N-D. I said is. God is sex. It's not God and sex. These things are not separate. And I'm so glad that Frenchie was quick to say, hey, I'm going to connect you on Facebook with Lucette. She's somebody who can talk with you about this. And Frenchie, when you hear this, I want you to know I will never doubt any recommendation you ever give to me. If this is the standard of recommendation that I can expect, you can recommend anything to me, sister. So, again, if you want to call in, you're listening at 657-383-0185. I have a question for you, Rev. What is the real sticking point for people that you have counseled around sexuality in spirituality? Can you name a couple of things that people really struggle with when it comes to expansive, optimal sexuality expressions and spirituality, in parentheses, religion?
One of the first things that comes to mind is LGBTQ identity. Folks who are on that spectrum, first of all, who they are, right? So their identity, like themselves, their own humanity. That is a big one. And then the next one is sex outside of marriage, right? So I've had a lot of conversations around, is it okay to have sex before you're married? And can I be single in sex? Casual sex, what does that mean? Masturbating, am I, going to hell? And then I think the next thing.
I'm sorry, hold up, Rev, hang on a second. Rev, hang on.
Yep.
Hang on. I don't mean to be facetious. I'm a respectful guy. I know we just met, but I just had to laugh. People still ask, am I going to hell?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me
am
about
I
the religion
going
piece.
To hell?
That's the yes.
Lord
Listen,
have mercy.
Ulysses, I don't know your family makeup, but let me just, and for your listeners, I am a black woman. And my culture is important to me, right? Who I am is important
right.
to me. And part of that culture is if my mama said it and my grandmama said it and my great-grandmama said it, and then if any one of them, took me to church, I know I'm just telling your listeners out just in case, and took me to church around other women who are mothers of the church. I become my auntie. You get the picture that I'm painting.
I do.
If
I
that's
do.
What
yes.
they told me, and that's how I saw them live, then why wouldn't it be real, right? And I'm with you. I kind of what are you talking about? Like, whatever. But, yes, that stuff is strong. It's deep in us. It's deep in folks. And let me just say this for diversity's sake if I need to. I have had this conversation, particularly living in the South. So I live in Richmond, Virginia. For those folks that forget about our American history, this is the seat of the Confederacy, i.e. this is the city that was the capital of the Confederate troops, okay? These are the people that said, anyway, I'm not gonna, this is not the show for that. But this is where I live. This is also so Southern Baptist folks that I meet of all colors and all hues and all backgrounds still believe that because that's what they taught. That's what they were taught. And I know there are some things that I don't, like, for example, I was taught growing up, you don't put your purse on the floor because your money going to go away. To this day, I am 42. I don't put my purse on the floor. And when I do some weird prayer ritual situations because I didn't have any other option but to put my purse on the floor. But because this is something that was passed down, I still believe that thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That stuff is strong.
It is. It is. When you put it that way, you know, we talk sometimes about curses. We talk about spells. We talk about magic. You know, we talk about all kinds of impact, supernatural impact, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think what we dismiss, this is kind of like, you know, saying God is sex. I think what we try to, like, separate and define miracles as if this is a miracle, but this is not a miracle.
Uh-huh.
We try to define supernatural from unsupernatural. And I think we do ourselves an incredible disservice by trying to separate supernatural from natural. It's all supernatural by degree, right? There's some things that we've seen, some of us have seen, and some of us have not seen. There's some things that we felt, and some of us have not felt. And when you put it that way, there's something to be said about the collective and individual hypnosis, deep hypnosis that we all exist within, that is so much part of our blood. And I mean that, like, chemically. The mind is part of the blood. The mind is in the blood. And we find ourselves trying to escape the thing that lives within us and has taken root within us. And I think only when we find ourselves trying to escape it do we realize how strong it is. We can play all we want to until we try to get away, and we can't get away. And it could be simple memories. I think about some memories that I've had, and I'm like, I wish I could stop thinking about that. And it seems benign sometimes when I say I wish I could stop thinking about whatever that is. But this stuff is heavy. It can be heavy.
Yeah.
And there's another side of it to me that says that it's not only heavy, but it's actually beautiful as well. And I think respecting the beauty and the strength and power of these messages, the purse on the floor, come on. That's like everybody in the church. If you're in a church with 300 people in the congregation, one person on the floor messing up for everybody. Get that purse off the floor.
Get it off the floor.
So these conversations about, you know, God and sex, God is sex. Mm. It is no wonder for me that it is tough for people to manage a conversation that they are constantly running from, that they avoid. And it really is unavoidable. And I think until we turn and face it the way that you've kind of laid it out, you did a really good job. As I look at your website, I love the way you were so quick to just answer my question around what is sex. And if anybody goes to that website, again, it is willyoubewhole.com, they'll see that you've laid out sexuality. You talk about faith and spirituality. You talk about any number of things here. You've thought about the things that people should think about, and who am I to commend you for it, but I definitely respect and appreciate that you've given this stuff a lot of thought. Tell me this. I'm gonna ask a semi-personal question. How is it for you to match when you are interested in someone intimately? Is it difficult to match that level of thinking, that level of research is not the word I'm looking for, that level of love for what you do? Has it been difficult for you to match that in your personal relationships?
Yeah, I'm single. that is such a good question. And so I think that as of today, in this current moment, I probably have more cynicism toward finding a partner than I have receptivity to finding a partner. I have more cynicism than I have receptivity.
Wow. Okay.
That doesn't mean that the person that can complement the way you articulated, you know, who I am, that person probably exists. Am
right.
I currently, as of today, receptive to him or her as a bisexual woman? I'm not. I'm a little cynical right now, as of today. You know, but the Lord is yet patient with the sister, and so I think that will change. But honestly, I've also come to this place where I really am clear that whoever my next partner is, that individual would have to be so comfortable with themselves and with who they are to even be able to be in relationship with me on that kind of deeper romantic level. Because at the end of the day, I think my very nature is, like, who I am, I'm always going to be questioning, and I'm always going to be provoking, like, people to think and to question. And, like, even
right.
with somebody that would be my partner, you know, that individual would have to be okay with, like, being who they are, right? And that part of that is, like, I know who I am. I know what this is and who you are, right?
Right.
And so there can't be any, like the individual can't feel some kind of way about it, or they just have to be able to be playful with it, or like be open to engaging it. But most importantly, what I have learned from the relationships in my life is that they have to be their own selves and have their own thing, because Reverend L is a persona and a personality in the world. And Lisette is Lisette. And while Reverend L does not, like, she don't come from the air, she is a part of who I am.
Right.
You're going to be in a relationship with Lisette, not with Reverend L. Right? And
wow.
So,
wow. I love that.
I
love it.
Thank you. I think that's important for those of us that do this work, because people see the public persona and don't always understand the work that we do, because this is a divine call, right? So regardless of where a person is on the spirituality spectrum, right, I believe that when we are brought forth into this world, when the Creator created you, you were given a purpose. And your purpose is lived out. It could be in your job. It could be in your hobbies. It could be in what Alice Walker says, and Dr. Katie Cannon says, doing the work that your soul must have.
Mm.
You're doing that work. That's your call.
Mm.
So in the Christian language, that's your call, right? And so I get it, and I'm doing this work. But those of us that are called specifically to this intersection of sex and faith, or of this sexuality and, like, humanity, and sexuality and spiritually as aspects of our humanity, then we have to do certain kind of grounding, meditative, connective work that allows us to be out in the world in the way that we do. And so that means that the people who are part of our more internal private lives, they get front row seat to, like, our cultivation. And if that is not sacred stuff, I don't know what else is. Like, to be able to be that close to somebody that you then get to see go out in the world and do this kind of work, I think is, yeah, that feels sacred to me, and it feels, like, important and special, which, by the way, is why I'm currently cynical and not necessarily receptive, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I certainly appreciate that level of vulnerability and that transparency. I think that's the other thing that that's another characteristic of people who do this type of work. When people
mm-hmm.
talk with me about sex and the struggle, I often hear people talk about, you know, sex is private. And I say to them, yeah, but it is part of a collective behavior. It is impacting your private life, has a way of impacting everybody that you come in contact with. The way that you feel, the way that you love. I mean, which one of us has not had a good love-making session and gone out into the world and been like, oh, my God, I feel incredible, and everything about the world is beautiful. We see purple, you know, we see the purple, we see the lavender, we see it all because, you know, we were enraptured in a good moment.
Yes.
So the world fills our private lives. I don't know why we keep fooling ourselves into thinking that people don't feel it. They may not know the details, but they feel it. And I think it's okay for some of us, and I think it's necessary for some of us to be more transparent about who we are so that other people don't have to hide. Rev L, all this Me Too stuff that I've been looking at lately drives me batty. You know, I look at it and I go, I get it, and tell me why it is so acceptable for people who have been in pain to express their pain publicly, but people who have pleasure can't do the same thing. Explain that to me. And this is a rhetorical question, but it seems like it is indicative of our rejection of pleasure and our acceptance of pain that it's okay for me to say I was traumatized, not that I was overwhelmed with love. I can't say that, oh, my God, I just had the best sex ever. I can say somebody touched me inappropriately. But I can't say somebody touched me in the right place yesterday. Nobody wants to hear that. And
wow.
And that, too, creates a level of shame. The fact that I can't say that creates a particular shame that people don't seem to want to acknowledge. But anyway, I'm having too much fun here. I just want to tell people that this is Rev L, and you want to reach out to the sister. She is at willyoubehold.com. Reggie Davis, I cannot thank you enough. You were going to say something.
I need to say this. So we cannot relish in that which we have not seen consistently. We cannot give ourselves permission to model that which we have not seen consistently. What do I mean when I say that? I mean, what we have seen in media, in literature, in song, in scandals, in life, is the quote-unquote triumphant story, where a tragedy happens, such as sexual assault or inappropriate touching, right? All of those things that come under the umbrella of intimate partner violence or sexual violence, sexual harassment. We see those stories. I mean, just like spend a day watching like Lifetime Movie Channel, right? And we then see the images that are produced that then are like, oh, and then they came out and it was hard, and then they were, you know, okay. And I'm using okay very loosely, and
sure.
I'm not trivializing in. I mean, I am a survivor of rape, and I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, so I'm not minimizing this, right? So I am also
yes.
a hashtag me too. However,
yes.
what I also realize is that I am also the pleasure hashtag me too. Listen,
mm-hmm.
somebody touched me in the right place
right.
consistently for 5 good hours, and it was good, right? And
right.
and they were good, right? It was this exchange of pleasure, right?
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
what I have learned is that we, because of the shame related to embracing our pleasure, that you get less, quote, you know, the Black church uses testimonies, you get less testimonies about pleasure and more testimonies of how we've overcome this tragedy.
Mm.
And what
mm.
would happen for our community, and I'm using the word community in a collective term,
yes.
For all of us, if we heard more folks' testimonies of pleasure. Child,
mm.
last night, he touched me in this way. Or child, last night, she and I found the right position. And girl, a honey, a man,
right.
she turned me over. And
mm-hmm.
if we were able to do that, right? During
right.
what was traditionally called testimony service in some Black church traditions, yeah, you laughing. I hear you laughing, right?
I'm
cracking
up.
Because,
well,
imagine,
that.
Come on now, imagine Deacon so-and-so getting up and saying, I want to thank God for letting me see another day. And I just want the church to pray with me. I had 2 good orgasms last night. And me and Deaconess so-and-so. Exactly, you laughing, right? So I'm saying, if we had the mother of the church stand up and be like, baby,
yes.
right? I'm just raising my
yes.
hand to God.
Yes.
And I'm saying, thank you for letting me see another day, because on last night, the Lord met me, and it was good, right? And she's
yes.
talking about self-pleasuring, okay?
Right. Oh,
because her
yeah.
husband
yep.
is dead. She is a widow, okay?
Right.
So
right.
you understand what I mean? So I guess if we were witnesses to that, then maybe we could celebrate it more. Because I can tell you, Ulysses, that every time, and I have been doing sexuality education for over 10 years, I spent about 2 or 3 years doing fellatio classes with women. And fellatio means blowjob, means sucking dick, just for those listeners that didn't know what fellatio was. And anytime I brought up good sex or orgasms or pleasure, there is always nervous laughter. And I
right.
would always finish those classes and think to myself, you signed up for a class to talk about, like, sucking somebody's dick. Like, why? You can't possibly be that shy. You want to put your mouth on someone's penis. I mean, it's like, and that's whether you're married or not. No judgment. Listen, I'm all about a sexual ethic, right? And
right.
I, you know, amen. Amen, right? We appreciate people who have penises that like them to be sucked and persons who like to suck them, and we want to give them the right tips. But I can tell you that throughout my years, when especially with adults, we have that nervous laughter around sexual pleasure.
Yep.
And I can never figure out why. But we do. And I think we have a long way to go. Maybe not in my lifetime, but hopefully in the next lifetime, I don't have any kids, so I can't say in my kids' lifetime, but in the young people that I have shaped, hopefully in their lifetime, they will be able to move past it. So,
well, I know one day me, you, and my sister Tazima, who is usually on this call, on this podcast, we are going to be in the same room together. And she says all the time, I would sometimes say, you know, I don't know if that'll ever happen. And her response is, oh, it's going to happen, and I'm going to see it. I love the way she claims it. She's like, oh, no. It's going to happen next year. You know, she's like, it ain't going to be no, you know, 20 years from now. It's going to happen 2 years from now.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that, that faith. And the possibility, because, you know, things happen fast sometimes. All it takes is a particular kind of situation, a particular incident, a particular something to happen, and all of a sudden everybody is quickly shifted into a whole nother mindset because they were almost forced to see something that they were ignoring. So I'm going to be with Tazima on this, and I'm going to say, yeah, we going to get this thing done before we die. That's And I tell you what, why don't we just, like, challenge ourselves to get this thing done before we close our eyes and go to wherever the next thing is. I just want to ask one more question. We are up against the clock. It is, oh, my God, it's 9:53 here on the East Coast. And first of all, I'm going to have you back here again because we just getting started with this whole God is sex thing. So I'm going to definitely ask you to join me again. But then the other thing, when you hear the phrase God is sex, what comes to mind for you?
Pure, unadulterated pleasure and mutuality and right relating. And that kind of pleasure has got to be good because God is good.
I thank you so much for that. I put myself on mute because I'm laughing. I'm like, this shit is too good. It has been marvelous speaking with you. I say again to my sister Frenchie, who I hope will hear this, thank you so much for making this happen. And this Sunday in Chester City, we are going to make God is Sex, Sex in the Struggle, God is Sex happen live. We've got some incredible, I wish you could be here, sister. We've got some incredible people here in the Philadelphia area that are coming. Tazima Davis is actually coming from Chicago. She's flying up for the weekend just for this. But we've got people like Alicia Gonzalez, Tony Rulo. We've got Mark Levin. We've got Tracy Q. Gilbert, myself. A sister named Rena J, who runs Indulgence Boutique, which is a sex shop in Philly. We got poets, we got singers. It's just going to be an incredible event, and we're going to celebrate. It's going to be like a revival of sexuality and spirituality. You know, we need to get to the point where we're talking about this thing with honor, with dignity, with inspiration. You used three I's earlier, and I don't remember what they were. It was like inspiration. What were those words? You said it was some three words related to your calling, I think. Inspiration.
The three things that I do is inspire, inform, and influence.
There we go.
Those are my three words, inspire, inform, and influence. Yeah, and that's what I try to do in my work.
Well, you have done it this evening for me and whoever is out there listening, and I want to thank you again for joining us. I want to tell people one more time that this has been Reverend Lucette. She goes, it's Reverend L to some people, but it is Reverend Lucette Cross, and she is at willyoubehold.com.
Yeah.
And you take people's calls, you coach people. How do people reach out to you? Is this the best way to reach you?
Yeah, that's a great. So the best way to reach me is on the website, or my email is willyoubehold@gmail.com. I am just learning how to do what I call sex and faith kind of pastoral coaching, because I am clearly connected to faith. And so, yeah, I am open to receiving those inquiries. I also do training and develop resources, and am in the process of getting that information up on the website. Just finished creating some resources. You can check me out on, if you are on Facebook, I do a Facebook Live Wrestle With It Wednesday. On Wednesdays at 11:30, and actually tomorrow, 11:30 Eastern time, and tomorrow I will be wrestling with the Bible, power, problem, and potential. Because I am a good Baptist preacher, so you got to have 3 points. And so I'm going to be talking about that wrestling wrestling with it, and so people can check me out there. I do make the videos public so that folks can share it widely, and so I'm learning, kind of as you said, Ulysses, as we that are called to do this work, that we get that message more out there.
Yeah.
We begin to see that the hunger is there for people. And so I'm learning how to evolve in that process. So it is good.
It is good indeed, sis. I thank you so much. And to the people who were tuned in and just listening, thank you for those who will listen in the future. Thank you for listening. If you're in the Philadelphia area, New York, D.C., Sex and the Struggle happens this Sunday. This Sunday, MJ Free Theater in Chester, Pennsylvania, about 15 miles outside of Philadelphia. You do not want to miss this. We are going to have a good time. I'm going to videotape some of this stuff for you, Rev, so you get a chance to see where we're coming from. As a matter of fact, I'm going to send you some links to some stuff so you can see our first event. And you and I are going to have some conversations, and I'm hoping that me, you, and Jesus can be on this call on a regular basis.
Amen. I'm down. I feel it in my spirit. It feels good and right. So, yes.
Good, good. Thank you again. And to everyone listening, I am going to sign off. Sex and the Struggle, God is Sex, comes to an end now. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening. Good night, everyone.